We joined by Elise Glink, the owner of Think Glink Media and Best Money Moves. ThinkGlink.com is the best way to find her. Hi, Elise. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, John. Nice to be here.
I see some of your notes, and my notes included just watching News Nation as it scans across my screen here. We've been talking a lot about migrants, immigration issues, what happened over the weekend, that in the hospitality industry, it's believed that 1 in 8 workers in hospitality in America are migrants, and in the food picking and producing business, it's 1 in 12. I thought it would be actually higher than that. And one that kind of jumped out at me was construction trades. And again, maybe it's not too surprising, but it's amazing how many people, I think it was 1 in 10 or 1 in 12 people, are migrants who are in the construction industry. And you have some observations about that field as well.
Yeah, we've talked about this, you know, I don't know how often over the last year or so, but the construction trades, the way that we build houses today, relies deeply and has for decades on immigrant labor that brings in the kind of expertise that you need. So according to the National Association of Home Builders, an estimated 64% of plasterers and stucco masons are immigrants. More than half of drywall and ceiling tile installers are immigrants, 48% of papers and paper hangers, like wallpaper hangers, 47% of roofers, 46% of carpet floor and tile installers, 41% of just overall construction laborers, 39% of hazardous removal workers, like hazardous materials, 37% of brick masons and stone masons, and, you know, it goes on from there. And then, I don't know about it being 1 in 10. I think it's probably a little bit more like,
yeah,
you know, 1 in 9 or 1 in 8.
Well, I notice your numbers are larger than mine, and I'm wondering if the number that I saw scroll across the screen was undocumented. But either way, it's no surprise that we are very dependent upon people in this country who are from other countries to do many of the things that we need done.
Yeah, I think it's maybe perhaps a little unestimated. You know, when you hire somebody and bring them to your house and say, I'm having a problem with my hot water tank, or they're replacing it, right? They may come from another country. I mean, this whole country was founded on the idea that people come from other places, right? We all came from somewhere else at some point in time, unless you're native. But when it came to construction trades, you know, originally it was the Irish, you know, community that brought the stonemasons and the brick builders, and it was the Italian community that brought some of the paint laborers and all the rest. When we had our home renovation done 25 years ago, the person who built these beautiful bookcases in my office today was from Poland.
This is only tangentially related to that. I'll make this point, and then we'll move on to some other things. But I was talking to some friends over the weekend, and a member of one of their families is has been a restaurant manager of one of the major chains of restaurants across the country. This person is managing that franchise for this company. They are DACA, which is fine, but then because they were intimidated by what might happen if they were to renew their DACA status, which they should not be, but they were, and maybe understandably so, they let that lapse. And the company, realizing, they went through their polls now of all of the people that work for them, and they checked her status and realized that she had not updated her paperwork, and they called her up and said, you're fired. She managed a major restaurant chain franchise in Chicago area, and now she's out of work. So now she's sitting there without any income, a husband, a kid, and it's... Boy, do we need to figure that out in this country.
We do. The restaurant industry is going to be really hurting.
Yeah.
You know, there's a major restaurant / food industry company in Chicago that I, you know, not at liberty to say who it is, but they sat all of their workers down and said, we know all of you are legal because we've checked it. We know many people in your family are not. If we can help in any way, let us know. And it was just it's really a heartwarming display. They recognize that, you know, while they're, you know, all of their people are legal, there are a lot of people that they're related to who may need help and may be scared and frightened. And we do need to figure this out.
Well, you know what this person did then, after discovering that that person no longer had a job, their partner said, we got to get married. And they ran to the courthouse and got married, hoping that that would buy them some status or time. but they're not sure what the future is. And whatever we want to say about the criminal element that is here, of course they should be arrested and charged and either thrown in our jails or deported. But that isn't the vast majority of people we're talking about. And that's the people I'm talking about. We need to figure that out. Talk to me about existing home sales in the country, in the state. What are you looking at there?
Well, we're seeing, this was a stunning number, John. I mean, existing home sales fell to a nearly 30-year low, despite the fact it was bumped up a little bit in December. I mean, we're talking about sales at 4 million, just slightly over 4 million.
For what time period?
For last year.
Last year.
Last year. And that is the lowest level since 1995. I mean, just a stunning, stunning number. We should be, just so that everybody knows, we should be at around 6 million to 7 million, given the number of people in this country. And the fact that it has fallen is really all about interest rates and lack of inventory.
Which would you put the finger on the most?
Probably interest rates. Because if interest rates came down, then people who are holding on to their homes because they don't want to buy new and pay a higher interest rate, and they still have like 3% as a home loan, they would probably be encouraged to sell. But since interest rates are so high and touched even 7% last week, we're not going to see that anytime soon.
We're talking to Elise Glink, Think Glink Media. You said, well, the market's probably going to be red all day today. Bobby, what did you say some of the numbers are right now?
We're pretty far down here. The S&P 500's lost 117, almost 2%, 59.84. NASDAQ down 677. That's almost 3.5%. Yeah. It's at 277.
And all of this because of that Chinese chip maker AI?
Those types of things, yeah.
Elise is talking to us a little bit about, well, this too, huh? Are you watching this as well?
Because so much of our wealth right now is tied up in the stock market. More than half of Americans have investments in the equity market, right? They have some sort of stock somewhere. They have crypto. They have gold, you know, gold futures. They have bonds, right? All of that gets affected when you have an announcement like China's DeepSeek, and that somehow this is going to be even more magical and much less expensive than ChatGPT or what Anthropic has. But I would just, you know, sort of say to the markets, like, stop panicking, right? You know, this, you know, whatever it is, right, you still have a U.S.-based solutions versus a China-owned large language model. And if the U.S. is having problems with TikTok ownership, I can't imagine they're going to like the idea of a Chinese large language model that learns from every single thing you put into the search bar. So, my feeling is this is an overreaction. I think over the rest of this week, we're going to see the market bounce back when, you know, traders stop getting freaked out and they start realizing that there just isn't going to be a way that a China-owned large language model is going to become the biggest thing in the world. I just don't see it happening for this country.
But what does jump out at me is that they built it for $5.5 million. I mean,
but did they?
That, oh, well, there you go. Thank you. Thank you for that, because that is the number that's being reported. And you think, you know, they must know something we don't. For instance, they're not using the highest powered chips from the NVIDIAs of the world. And so what do they know that we don't? And 5.6 million? I mean, that's chump change around here.
It is. And it's probably not even close to being real. Even if it were 5 or 6 billion, right? You have to consider that people in China aren't earning the same wages as everybody else is earning, right? So that would bring it down. You have to wonder, you know, what they're training it on. Are they training it on all of the TikTok stuff because they own TikTok? Like, we really just don't know what those numbers actually are and what they look like. There are a lot of interesting free large language model, code, that the code bases that have been shared now globally, and they could just be building it on something like that instead of really coming up with something all new. It's just too hard to know, and I am not an AI expert by any means, but I can just say that, you know, who knows if what they're saying is really true. I can speak to how economists look at the Chinese, you know, economy. And when China reports its number, it's always taken with a grain of salt. And so I would just say, pass the salt shaker.
It's interesting you say all of that. I was with a couple of former Salukis. I went to school at Southern Illinois Carbondale with a couple of other guys in the communications school. We've all paid attention to the industry since we left school. Over the weekend, one of them was telling me he was at a conference and they were talking about AI. And I shared with him an observation I heard from an expert in Chicago last year, which is that you won't be replaced by artificial intelligence. You'll be replaced by somebody who uses artificial intelligence. Understand that it's a tool, it's out there, and make it your friend, not your foe. It's interesting. And then my buddy said, well, the version of that he heard was an expert at a conference said, look, everybody, I don't want AI to write my ad copy. This was an advertising conference. And you can just say, hey, write a commercial for PermaSeal, and bing, you have one instantly. The guy said, I don't want AI to write my copy so I can do my laundry. I want AI to do my laundry so I can write better ad copy. We need to stay, you know, realize that you're laughing, but I thought that was profound. I thought, amen to that. Pick the reason you use this and maintain the human integrity of some of the things we like to do.
No, I'm laughing because it's exactly right. You know, we want the people in this country want AI. Certainly, we want to have them help us do stuff that, you know, is cool and interesting and helps us do our jobs better. But we also want the day-to-day boring stuff of life taken care of.
So use it for that. Here's just another interesting example, Elise, I think. And that is that he said at that same, it might have been another interaction my friend had, but he said that they did a demonstration. They said, okay, let's pick a boutique flower shop in Poughkeepsie. And they said to this large language model, write and produce a 30-second commercial for that flower shop or boutique. And he said that in less than 30 seconds, you can have a fully executed TV commercial. You can get in less than 30 seconds a fully executed 30-second TV commercial. So then, bing, the commercial pops up. It's got a music bed. An announcer says, Elise's Flower Shop in Poughkeepsie is ready for you. It's got the store hours, graphics. It's got beautiful narration and stuff. And that happened like that, which is maybe a little troubling for people in the ad copy or TV commercial producing business, but there's software out there that is free that can virtually make a commercial for you faster than you can say, make a commercial for me.
Yeah, it is amazing what technology, the leverage that technology gives us.
Yeah, and so then I'm not exactly sure what that means to people interested in advertising, but okay, knowing that, now what else can you do to enhance the experience? That must be the challenge, right?
I think it is. I mean, just from what I know about, you know, we at Best Money Moves, my financial wellness company, we've actually integrated Anthropic's large language model, they call it Claude, you know, for search, and we're bringing it online for as an AI agent, one that you can, you know, as you're looking at your money, you can say to it, how do I, you know, how much money will I have in retirement? And it'll actually look at all of your inputs and everything else, and it'll tell you how much money you have, what you need, how the budget should look, right? It's really amazing, because to do all that work yourself is a lot of work, and people, you know, want that instant answer. And so we're building it in at a level that not only will let the user decide and engage at that level and have that private conversation, but it will allow the HR team that's paying for it, not individually, but to get some, ask their own high-level questions about their workforce. Like, what are my people interested in? And it'll pop up the names of all the articles that everybody's been tagged in and reading.
And reading, yes.
Help them understand it better.
I got about 90 seconds left. What's the latest on insurance rates relative to the fires in L.A.?
We're about to see a revolution in fire, and this isn't fire insurance, any kind of hazard insurance. It's not going to be pretty. I mean, the Los Angeles fire, it looks like almost 16,000 residential properties burned. They have a value of $40 billion. Single-family homes, townhomes, condos, co-ops, does not include any of the commercial buildings that were destroyed, the school buildings that were destroyed. This is a huge, huge problem. And the fact that State Farm pulled out of its ad for the Super Bowl just tells you that cash is going to be tight for insurance companies, which means as soon as they can, and we've already seen an increase in the state of Illinois, I think maybe up as much as 14%, we're going to see more throughout the country. So that's really going to be the bottom line, mm-hmm. is that the insurance industry is a bit broken, and we're all going to have to live with however it gets remade.
Yeah, maybe not broke, but I'm also thinking that it would be hard for them to credibly say, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there, when if you want to buy insurance in California or Florida, they ain't. Or they certainly don't want to be. It's interesting. Elise Glink at Best Money Moves. Click on thinkglink.com for references to the things she's been talking about here. And let's talk about it more next week.
You bet.
WGN, I'm John Williams with producer Pete Zimmerman, and you're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN, now with Jim Dahlke, the Director of Communications at Tech Nexus Venture Collaborative. We just got done talking with Elise Glink about various things, including AI, and I see that's on your list of topics to talk about today too, huh, Jim?
Hey, John, that's right. You know, 2024 felt like the year of AI, certainly anecdotally, right? It was all that everybody could talk about, technology. And a new report from PitchBook and the National Venture Capital Association really put some numbers to back that up. Startups that are in artificial intelligence and machine learning raised $97 billion in venture capital funding in 2024. That's about half of all the funding that all U.S. startups raised last year, and up from $58 billion that AI startups raised the year before. So if it felt like you were hearing a lot about AI startups, it's because they were raising gobs and gobs of money, and it appears to have no signs of slowing down.
What's an AI startup? Is that actually an artificial intelligence, you know, information generator, or is it a company that is somehow using one of the existing platforms?
Yeah, it's a great question. A lot of companies are using the existing technologies from companies like OpenAI, for example. So, you know, this is businesses that are able to kind of license that technology and sort of tweak it for yourself. But it's also a lot of businesses that are building, you know, genuinely new AI products themselves. So OpenAI raised, you know, tens of billions of dollars last year, really kind of a bulk of that $97 billion. We've seen a handful of Silicon Valley startups that are kind of doing the same thing, especially around this generative AI technology. And you know, it's one area that we're seeing, you know, exponential growth, right? We're seeing lots of companies, both large and small, gravitate towards generative AI. And there are products that are, you know, commanding significant venture dollars. And so, you know, even in Chicago, we've seen startups in a range of different industries raise funding for AI products. And you know, continue to grow Chicago startups. And Chicago startups, kind of narrowing down here, raised about $2.5 billion overall last year. So that's kind of normalized, right? Since the pandemic, Chicago startups in 2022 raised about $10 billion. So certainly well off the mark from what we saw during the peak during the pandemic there. But that number did tick up from last year, where startups here raised about $2.4 billion. So you know, what experts have told me that, you know, for Chicago to kind of continue to be a major player in the startup scene, we're really going to see it's about $5 billion annually in venture capital raise. So still a little bit off the mark there. So some room to grow.
Do you know much about this DeepSeek company from China? Is that a shot across the bow for all these other firms?
Yeah, you know, what I know about it is it's got everybody in quite a tizzy. What they have proven to do is have a model that is appears to be, you know, similar in quality and capability to the open AIs of the world, but at a much, much, much smaller price point. They're able to reportedly do so for really pennies on the dollar compared to the billions that have been invested in a company like OpenAI. So I think we're still seeing how this is playing out, right? But I mean, it certainly sent some shockwaves, certainly in the publicly traded AI companies. NVIDIA, for example, stock was down quite a bit this morning, and others as well. So we'll have to continue to see how that little ripple plays out.
Elise Glink wondered a minute ago if they were being honest. She did not wonder if they had stolen some of the technology, but that would not be unlike somebody from China. But she also wondered if that was a fabricated number. For what purpose, I don't know. But she doesn't believe everything that comes out of there.
I think we should absolutely be skeptical. I think Elon Musk has already come out and said that, you know, they're sort of underreporting the number of processors and other, you know, chip technology that they're buying from NVIDIA, for example. So certainly, this is an opportunity to, you know, provide some skepticism, right, and to kind of slow down. But regardless, it's certainly a time of new technology, you know, from China comes out like that. It certainly got America on its heels a bit, and those in the tech industry are going to be, you know, evaluating that very closely.
And NVIDIA is the company we still talk about for these high processing chips. And is that the one that's based in Taiwan, right, NVIDIA?
No, they're local here to the U.S. And so, you know, that's a business that, is really kind of at the epicenter, you know, for the emerging, you know, AI industry. And as you mentioned, these you know, high processing chips. And so, I mean, it's definitely a business that is integral, you know, to the growth of the AI boom. And certainly they've got their eye on this startup and others.
Okay, here's another one that I see, but I've not heard it out loud. QUMIS. Is that Kumis?
Yeah, this is Kumis. So Kumis. Keeping on the AI theme, this is an AI startup here in Chicago, specifically around legal technology. They've developed some AI software that helps organizations kind of instantly identify claims and decide on the merits of those claims. So if you know, your business is sued, for example, you can use this QMIS technology to kind of quickly determine, oh, this is a frivolous suit, or, oh, this is something that needs, you know, more attention, and continue to go up the ladder with that. Really fascinating technology and an example of how we're using, you know, generative AI in real-world applications, right? Not just sort of writing your junior year term paper for you, right? So this is actually using this really sophisticated technology to help legal teams really across the board. Got a great feature in here called a precedent search, where you can sort of copy a certain piece of a claim, for example, and immediately find a precedent that exists and that's relevant to your case. And so really interesting new legal software built right here in Chicago.
And is that for the insurance industry, did you say?
Yeah, for insurances, or, you know, so let's say you and I decided to go start a company, John, and, you know, maybe we've got one lawyer in-house, and rather than having to pay for a whole team of them, we've got, you know, one head of legal and a bunch of different software solutions that can kind of offset the cost of what would be a real full-time lawyer working for us. And so really it's kind of a tool in the tool belt for companies to not have to necessarily take all the time and resources that they traditionally had to in terms of full-fledged legal teams.
South by Southwest, we've got some Chicago names in the game, huh?
Yeah, that's right. So South by Southwest, still a major tech event every year taking place in March. Three Chicago companies are going to be participating at the annual pitch competition down there. This is a famous pitch competition. It's launched companies like Siri, for example. So we've got an ag tech startup called Earnest Agriculture. They're developing sustainable solutions to help farmers increase their productivity. There's another company down there called Fluid Reality, which is making a glove for your VR devices so you can actually feel the items that you're seeing in your VR headset. And the third company here is a startup called Dev Difference, which is doing AI job interviews, kind of mock interviews to help you prep for different job interviews using AI to give you feedback as you answer questions in real time.
Do you know, is anybody doing it where the interview is artificial intelligence? Maybe a hologram appears and the computer interviews me and determines my eligibility or viability. Does that exist?
You know, I don't know about the hologram, but that's basically what this Dev Difference is doing, is that they've got, an AI voice that's interviewing you, you know, shooting you questions, and then, you know, evaluating your responses, giving you feedback on those responses and kind of actionable next steps to improve upon that, tweak it, and better prepare you for an interview moving forward.
And the interface with that is verbal?
Yeah, and written. So it will do a voice as well as text.
And it's a practice app, not the actual hiring decision. Is that what you're saying?
That's right. So this is an app that's kind of brought in, you know, sort of publicly, you know, announced, you know, hiring manager rubrics and scores and, mm-hmm. you know, all the things that are that those businesses have sort of publicly said that they take into account during interviews, kind of rounded all that up and created technology that can evaluate you in a practice setting.
Having said what I just said, I predict next week when we talk, you'll be telling us about the hologram that interviews you and decides if you get the job or not. What do you think of that?
I like that. Hey, maybe I'll be a hologram too.
Yeah. I don't like that, and maybe I will be one as well. Jim Dahlke is the Director of Communications at TechNexus Venture Collaborative. Thank you, Jim.
Thanks, John.
It's time for more business news. On the Wintrust Business Lunch, here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. A Chicago-based physical therapy chain is expanding. Doctors of Physical Therapy has acquired Empower Physical Therapy, which includes locations in Arizona, California, Texas, and Louisiana. Cranes reports the purchase will add 56 locations to the 104 already operated by Doctors of Physical Therapy. The company will now have a presence in 11 states, including dozens of industrial sites that focus on workers' compensation. Terms of the deal have not been disclosed. Brick and mortar didn't pan out for Chicago's Radio Flyer. The company has closed its only physical sales location at Woodfield Mall. Radio Flyer's CEO says the store was an experiment and was just not profitable. The store opened in 2023. It covered about 15,000 square feet and allowed customers to test Radio Flyer's products, including the iconic original Little Red Wagon. The company's products will still be for sale at other stores, including Target, Walmart, and online at Amazon. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Sorry to hear that Radio Flyer story. We've talked to them many times. They're good people. They're local people, and they didn't advertise here, did they? Here's the business of food now. Here is Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you, and let's talk about food inflation. And if there's one food that is symbolic of inflation the past few years, it is...
The Incredible Edible Egg.
I've got an expert on the phone.
My name is Mark Dresner, and I am the Director of Communications at the American Egg Board.
More about why prices are so high again after I thank the Chevy Silverado for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Find out how at ChevyDrivesChicago.com. Okay, high egg prices. Don't blame the farmers, says our expert.
Farmers are doing everything they can to keep costs down, but the volatility that we've been seeing in egg prices reflects many factors, most of which are quite honestly outside the control of an egg farmer.
So what do we blame? Well, the big thing is the bird flu.
And this is devastating to egg farmers. In the U.S., we've lost about 40 million egg-laying hens since the beginning of 2024 to today. It has an emotional toll, which cannot be understated, and a financial one for the farmer as well.
And another reason for high prices is this.
I love eggs.
The volume of eggs at retail has been up year over year. So these two forces combined, tight supply, high demand, are directly causing the spike in wholesale prices.
Hold on, wait a minute. There's something wrong with that equation. Normally, when the prices of a product go up, demand goes down. That is not the case with eggs.
The numbers of eggs by the dozen have been up every month, year over year, for almost 2 years, for 22 consecutive months.
Or, put another way,
Americans just love their eggs.
Yeah, we do. And he says, keep this in mind.
The carton of eggs at 3 eggs per person will feed a family of 4. It's a good value.
The Incredible Edible Egg.
Meanwhile, the move to require cage-free eggs has also played a role in lower supply and higher prices. More about that tomorrow. On the food calendar, you'll need an egg or two for this. It's National Chocolate Cake Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Speaking of fun, Max Stevenson is the GLASA, Great Lakes Adaptive Sports Association Senior Program Manager. They've got a good event coming up with sleds and whatnot. Thanks for joining us today, Mac. How are you?
I'm doing well, John. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
What's GLASA? I got the acronym, but I mean, what do you all do?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So we are an adaptive sports agency where we have about 20 plus different sports for anybody with a physical or visual disability, ranging from youth, 4 years old, all the way up to, I think we got a couple of 70-year-olds doing shooting. We have injured military with this as well, and all in between.
Is this Chicago-based, or are you across the country?
So our community is mostly Midwest-based, Lake Forest, Lake County area.
And what's the event that's coming up February 2nd?
So February 2nd, we have our big The Sleds Are Coming event. And it's where we partner with Lake Forest College, and our sled hockey team goes they play a little scrimmage game against each other. And, you know, we try to raise community awareness and get people really excited for our season.
So there's an actual league. You have a season of games, sled hockey. People disabled that play hockey on the sleds?
We do, yes. So we are in a league called the Freedom League. And there's about 12 teams. And we travel all, like I said, around the Midwest. So far we've been to Indianapolis and Ohio. Later on in the year, we'll be going to Detroit and Grand Rapids. And the accumulation of the entire season will end with our national tournament. That's where teams nationwide come. And so we'll be in Coral Reef, Florida for nationals this year.
Describe for me the sleds and how the players use them and play the game.
Sure, yeah. So they sit in what we call buckets, and they're kind of like a rounded seat, and underneath them are two blades that you would see on the bottom of skates. So that's how the sled sits on the ice. And in each hand, they have their hockey sticks, and they're about 25 to 30 inches long. And on the end of the stick, where normally they would put hands, are ice picks. And so they use the ice picks to propel themselves on the ice, and then they shift them real quickly down in their hands. They are able to puck handle, and that's how they shoot as well.
So they're scooting along the ice. Describe the play for me. Is it like traditional hockey games then?
Absolutely, 100%. It's 5-on-5, like regular hockey, and then your goalie. And it is just as rough and tumble as regular hockey. A lot of checking, and it gets pretty serious.
Well, I've seen video of wheelchair basketball before, and I know those guys can get as serious and active as people who aren't in chairs. It sounds like this would have the same dynamic.
Absolutely, yeah. It's quite physical. And honestly, a lot of finesse goes into it as well. Just being able to handle the puck on the ice with those sticks, it's pretty incredible to watch.
What's the age of the players?
So with us, we have our youngest is 13 and our oldest is 40. So we have a pretty wide range, and we play teams where they've got guys that are 50, 60 years old. And usually there's a cutoff at like 13, 14 years old. So it ranges all throughout. So it's pretty great. And it's both male and female. So it's really, competitive amongst everyone.
You know, I know that people, as they get into their 60s, are still active and want to be, even though their knees aren't what they used to be. And I suppose the urge to play games is ever so strong in the disabled community as well. I'm glad to hear that people 50 or 60 can still participate.
Absolutely, yeah. It's very cool to watch because, a lot of the disabled athletes have been told all their life, hey, you can't do this, you can't play this sport, that sport. What's great about our agency, GLASA, I believe, is that we try to provide an opportunity for every single athlete to play any sport that they can get their hands on, which I think is awesome.
Wow. Okay, so Lake Forest College Athletic Department will co-host the 14th annual Sleds Are Coming exhibition sled hockey event. This is going to be at the Alumni Memorial Fieldhouse and Ice Rink at Lake Forest College, February 2nd. That's Feb 2 from 2 to 3:30. It's open to the public. Admission is free. What the heck? Let's go out, watch, enjoy, support. Sounds like a great idea, Mac.
Awesome, John. Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, everybody, please come out, support, and really just enjoy the game. Enjoy the beautiful game that it is.
That's Mac Stevenson. If you want to know more, glasa.org, GLASA, glasa.org.